This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
The other thing, wow, your cats are really
Dude, give me a second here. Dude, Chester.
My Bookie presents Shake Them Ropes. Use code ROPES. Get double your deposit up to $1,000. Also, we're sponsored this week by Keeps. More about both later. Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novembrino. Chris, you were a guitar guy. What did that come
from? Yeah, a lot of people, they call me a guitar guy.
We're both kind of music nerds here. So, death of a guitar icon. Eddie Van Halen passing away from cancer. I'm a fan of both the David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar incarnations of Van Halen. Where I sour on Van Halen is just knowing all the band arguments, and I always thought Mike Anthony was done dirty by the Van Halen brothers to get Wolfgang into the band. But you can't deny Eddie Van Halen is a damn trailblazer on the guitar.
Yeah, well, trailblazer, I think it is just kind of scratching the tip of the iceberg. I've been trying to put him into context this week ever since his passing, and what I've arrived at when you really think about where Eddie Van Halen's legacy lands in terms of the history of guitar playing is he is like the Vince Carter post Michael Jordan, or even the LeBron James post Michael Jordan, to the Jimi Hendrix being the Michael Jordan here of guitar. Totally different game, but an important figure in his own right on the same level as Jimi Hendrix because of new and different techniques that he was introducing. Lots of whammy bar stuff, which obviously was a signature part of Hendrix's playing, but what Eddie was doing was really taking that to a completely different level. And in addition to that, obviously two-finger tapping, which he didn't invent, and he kind of introduced to American rock music at around the same time as Frank Zappa, but everyone associates two-finger tapping with Eddie Van Halen. And every guitar player I've ever seen who is doing two-finger tapping when they get the guitar, they do Eddie Van Halen solos like Eruption, and they don't play stuff from Zappa. No knock on Zappa here, but Eddie is the guy who put it on the map for people.
Is Eddie the one who always turned his back so you couldn't see his technique?
No, he didn't turn his back like that, no.
Okay. I
know who you're referring to, but it's definitely, it's not Eddie. Eddie's freewheeling, you know, he's like throwing up kicks and stuff. You know, his whole thing was a looseness, both on the stage, but also in his playing. And like, that's the other thing I've been kind of thinking about in terms of his legacy, is you have 1,000 imitations of Eddie Van Halen all through the 1980s.
All the hair bands were Eddie Van Halen. Yeah. Pretty much.
Tremolo picking, whammy bar sort of dives and stuff, but they never had the looseness and the freewheeling and flowing water-like nature of Eddie's playing.
He gets to make it sound like a person as well.
He had feel, man. Yeah, like listen to Sinner's Swing, which is probably my favorite cut of his in terms of riffing. It's got a great solo, but it's got the shuffle thing going. It's a swung heavy riff, and it is kind of so devilishly tricky to pull off in a way that the no knock on James Hetfield being able to go chugga 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 really fast is an art in and of itself. But Van Halen just brought so many different things to the table. And then here's the other thing too, dude. So I'm teaching lessons this week, and I'm teaching some of my students how to use their amps. You know, they've got their first amps. Well, one of the amps, the Boss Katana, actually has a setting called Brown on it, which is modeled after Eddie Van Halen's tone that he was getting out of amplifiers in the late 70s, early 80s, the Brown tone. Yeah, like that's how big And how kind of influential he was. And the last point I have on this is in terms of guitar making. We think of him as a guitar player. He is important in terms of guitar sound, bringing in effects like flangers and phasers into the mix, all over the place, really changing sound. But he was also a really good builder of instruments. And he made the Frankenstrat, the kind of parts caster, taking different parts of different instruments and putting them together and trying different combinations and stuff. He made that cool to do, and he was also very good at doing it, and a lot of guitar makers took note. So, like, no, we, like, lost a real legend this week at the age of 65. And I know you feel like Mike Anthony was done dirty by Eddie Van Halen. I'm not arguing that. I just, like, the thing that I've been really touched by in kind of, like, thinking about Eddie this week is how committed both Eddie and Valerie are to their son, Wolfgang.
Yeah.
And like,
definitely.
How the love just oozes. I mean, Eddie's signature model of guitar that he made, the first one, named it Wolfgang. He named it after his son. It's not the Eddie Van Halen signature edition. It's called the Wolfgang, after his son. Like, that's some powerful stuff, dude. Not perfect due by any stretch, but love for his son is pure and true, and a hell of a musician. One hell of a musician.
Get a little personal one from me. RIP to one-hit wonder Johnny Nash, who got a hit. For some reason, I was raised on AM Gold radio on long car trips up and down the East Coast because we didn't fly, because that was a luxury at the time. Air travel's much cheaper now than it was back when I was a kid. Speaking in terms of, you know, today's dollars and things like that. But Johnny Nash, singer of the Jimmy Cliff song, I Can See Clearly Now. That is my macaroni and cheese comfort food song. If I feel bad, if I feel down, if I'm trying to feel good about myself or whatever, I put that thing on, just makes me smile. I know, it's weird, but it hit me kind of hard. It's weird when just random deaths kind of hit you hard, like some character actor dies, he goes, oh man, I like that guy a lot.
I can totally see you throwing up your hands during the bridge where they're like, it's nothing but blue skies.
I love the synth in that. I love the synth in that version, as opposed to like the Jimmy Cliff when he decided to come out with like that remake for the Cool Running soundtrack. It's a little too... It was a little too. I don't know the words for it. There wasn't as much. I mean, it felt very bland in terms of soul, which is very weird. But yeah, I love the song. I'm not gonna. Hey, to each their own. So Chris, Draft Talk 2020 winners, losers. Call now 1-800-ROB-SUCKS. That's 1-800-ROB-SUCKS. Who did well? Who did poorly? Who are we going to have to wait a few years before seeing the...
I got to tell you, Jeff, this draft really shook things up. Of course, who could forget what happened in the first round? Obviously, in the third round, big things happened. And then the one thing I do remember is the fourth round broke up the New Day.
Can they trade down to get more picks later? Yeah, that's the big story coming out of this year.
Who is even making these choices for Raw and SmackDown this year? They've really just slapped this
together. There's no Cletus, the robot. There's no
there's no boardroom of really excited execs from the different networks this time around. Yes. It might be.
Because even they weren't having this crap this year. We're not doing any of the shots. We're not going to help plug this thing.
You've seen the Star Trek episode, The Gamesters of Triskelion, right? Where there's the three robots that are gambling.
Hold on. What are you doing to me? Have I seen the Star Trek? No, I haven't.
You like the original series.
No, I don't. I don't like Star Trek at all.
Why do you do this to me?
Like, I like Wrath of Khan. I mean,
you're being horrible
cool.
to me right now. You're,
okay,
you're,
no, th- please
this,
explain.
This is literally aggression. This is literally aggression is what
please,
this is.
Please explain this Star Trek episode.
Look, they land on a planet and there are three robots that are betting on the fates of Kirk and the crew of the Starship Enterprise, which is engaged in a five-year mission. A friendly exploration.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever. Move on. It's fine.
No, we've
it's
done
fine.
This for 15 years, and they've never really done any creativity other than coming out and announcing names, and maybe occasionally a trade, but the trades don't matter. And
they can always just disregard this within a number of
and
weeks
they will.
If they want. And
because
they will.
Because it's Survivor Series build, and it's the one time a year people of one brand can fight people of another brand.
But that's not even true either, because Night of Champions is also that. And so is WrestleMania. Yeah. And so is SummerSlam. Like, the brand split has been dumb, not because the idea of having two separate brands is dumb in and of itself, but because there is absolutely no narrative discipline. And I think the thing that is maddening to me about the draft stuff is you have an entire year to plan out how you want to reset things.
Let me stop you there, sir. We don't even plan the show for a whole week before ripping it up 2 hours before airtime.
No, I know. But, like, this is actually the magic reset button, like the page one rewrite, and you can do it every single year. You can shake up things. You can stop angles that aren't working. You can get some angles that are really hot. Like, this could be a very useful narrative device for the show when it is floundering going into ratings week, and instead it is used as this, like, weird pop of, like, wouldn't you like to see all these wrestlers get drafted? Like, not really, because, like, Raw and SmackDown aren't teams. No one views them as teams. They just view them as two shows made by the same company.
Yes, there's no difference in theme or presentation or anything to differentiate them. Ergo, when they do colored t-shirt wars, it doesn't mean as much. And there aren't Raw fans and SmackDown fans. I mean, look, I'm hopeful for maybe Naomi getting some more matches on Raw because it's 3 hours, but she's in the same position, strictly on the mid-card. I like Bianca Belair coming over to SmackDown and having matches with Lacey Evans and Sasha Banks. I'm here for that. But, you know, why put the vignettes on Raw if you're just going to draft her over to SmackDown?
I mean, that's just revealing that there is no long-term plan. That's the only way you could kind of explain that.
All right, let's get to the news. WWE announced that Erica Nardini, the CEO of Barstool Sports, has been elected to the company's board of directors. Nardini was the first CEO of Barstool Sports in 2016, and through that appointment, she has launched more than 35 brands in sports, entertainment, female lifestyle, business, and sports betting. I like this move, Chris. I know that Brandon Thurston over on WrestleNomics will probably talk a little bit about this, but
why do you like this move? I'm agnostic on it.
I'll tell you why. A lot of people don't like Barstool Sports. I get it. Dave Portnoy can be abrasive. A lot of their dude bro shows are a little bit, you know, sexist or what have you. It's crude humor. It's jock humor. It's what Colin Cowherd wants to be.
There's a bit of, like, the man show energy going on from what I've seen.
But in the past, WWE has been culling to their board of directors from the business world and, you know, Etsy. And yes, they're good at branding and they're good at marketing, but they really haven't had input into popular culture or sports culture. Or, I mean, they'll hire the occasional person from ESPN or somebody worked with a volleyball league or whatever. But this is really the first kind of hire in a long time for me. Now, she's only on the board of directors. She's not running the show or anything, but she does have say. And she has knowledge of building a popular sports brand that is currently popular, not popular 20 years ago, but currently popular with the ever wanted 18 to 39 year old male demographic.
I know what they call that.
What do they call that?
They call it the demo.
In a drink, and I almost electrocuted myself. Thank you for that, Chris. Thank you for that insight, Chris Novembrino, on top of things. But yeah, no,
I am electric. It's true.
I mean, she knows marketing and sports, and she knows sports culture. So if they go to her for advice, I think it's a great idea. Now, she could just be, this could just be a ceremonial position where she's just making money off of stock, and, you know, that's fine too. I will never knock the hustle. But overall, I kind of like this hire.
All right. I mean, I think, look, anytime they could get some people who are younger, who are a little bit more connected to
that
where
too.
Culture,
she's
yeah, culture is today. I think that's a big, it's a benefit. No, I think it's a good thing. We'll see what happens, and we'll see how much say-so she has. I don't want to, like, I feel as though a take of, oh, this is going to be a game changer is probably wrong take.
I'm not going that far. But she's younger than half the people drafted tonight. So.
No, but I do think it's good for her to at least, you know, be able to offer some insight, and hopefully they'll listen. I mean, we'll just see.
In the Law and Order docket, former WWE and Impact Wrestling star Alberto Del Rio has been indicted on one count of aggravated kidnapping and four counts of sexual assault. Stay off drugs, kids. I got nothing else other to say other than it's been a pattern.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is who Alberto Del Rio is, man. Alberto El Patron. This is who Alberto is. This is what he does. I was going to say it's unfortunate, but, like, I liked him when he was in WWE. I wouldn't say I ever reached, you know, like, deep love. I've seen him have, like, very good matches, very good to upwards of great matches.
Oh, you have? Because I haven't. I've only seen, like, one match that really blew my socks off. Everything else was pattern.
I feel as though I saw one or two in Lucha Underground that I really liked.
Okay, yeah. Lucha Underground, you had to try.
Yes. Right. No, so, I mean, like, in WWE, I can't say that I was in love with him or anything like that. But, yeah, no, I've seen him have a few good matches, but he's never been my jam.
Current jurisprudence, Candy Cartwright is suing Matt Riddle, WWE, Evolve, and Gabe Sapolsky for $10 million per defendant in a sexual assault lawsuit.
Oh, my God, this angle on SmackDown with Jeff Hardy, the guy who is in rehab, Matt Riddle, the guy who's got this going on, and Lars Sullivan.
And they're talking about Miz going to court. Yeah, he ain't the only one in this match going to court, kids.
Yeah, no joke on that.
We'll get to Lars in a moment.
They call him the freak, by the way.
He's a freaking freak who freaks the place.
Has someone counted how many times Michael Cole said freak during that segment? Because it must have been upwards of 50.
I mean, he smurfing smurfed on the smurfing smurf. The smurf smurf. Smurf smurf smurf. Smurf smurf.
This guy's a freak, man. This freaking freak's a freak.
And he's freaking his way through the friggin' match.
What a freak.
What a friggin' freak. Glow canceled. Long time Shake Them Ropes listeners know that we reviewed the first season of Glow, and then we stopped in the second season when Rob quit. So I blame us for their cancellation. I'm taking that bullet.
I think it's too bad because I do think that there's an audience for this show, but I think, you know, like, look, companies have production constraints because of the pandemic. And, you know, they're just shows that if they're right on the margin right now, you kind of end up on the wrong side of the margin.
Well, here's the tragedy of this, because I actually watched the show in its entirety. Season 3 was all table setting for season 4, which would have been the final season. And it was basically nothing but setting things up for the next year. That's all it was. And now they can't pay it off.
Oh, man. That is lame.
Let's go into the injury report a bit. The big one, Ridge Holland, suffering a left ankle dislocation and fracture and a right knee patellar dislocation and patellar tendon rupture. Going to be out for a while. Happened on that dive on the outside during the beatdown of Birch and Lorcan, where he had to catch somebody. I hate that people have to catch people on the fly a lot because these things happen if you're not used to it. Ridge Holland used to lifting heavy things, not necessarily catching heavy things, yeah. Which is a totally different ball game. Kind of puts the main event angle from TakeOver on the shelf for a while. And really, right at the moment where he's going to get a heavyweight push.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. It does. It puts the angle involving Adam Cole and Ridge Holland out for a while. Ridge Holland making his way against Finn Balor. There's just a lot of fun stuff that Ridge Holland was primed to do. And I think a lot of what's supposed to happen with the Undisputed Era is running through the Ridge Holland intersection here. So it's going to be tricky for them to rewrite this angle. I think the answer is, right now, given that they have to do a pretty big rewrite and they have to be thinking about this, go back to Kyle O'Reilly. I think there's still tread on the tires.
I would agree. Some of the lesser injuries this week, although not necessarily on one of them, now that I read it. Angel Garza, who was drafted tonight, has a slight quad
the
tear.
The Lethal Lothario.
Yes. That's a great name. It's just...
Then they say Lothario five times.
Lothario, yes, they do. And that's,
he is Lotharific.
Yeah. And then they just beat it into the ground a while instead of really characterizing him. And then Mickie James, suffering a broken nose. She's bad. She'll come back. Badass as ever. Hopefully this doesn't... Boy, she...
I really dig Mickie James,
I love
man.
Her, and she has not gotten her due on this last veteran run because they've just been talking about how old she is and then cutting off her matches way too quick.
That's kind of the story of her whole career, though, right? Like, it's like never actually seeing what they've had in Mickie James this whole time down. You know, whether it's the early phase, the aughts, or what's happening now in the second run. I think she's a badass, dude, and I would love her to... be able to work longer matches because she can work longer matches. And there are people on that roster, Nijax, who are maybe not as good at carrying long lengths of matches, and Mickie James could lead to better matches.
Yeah, I would agree. I would have loved her in something like NXT, but...
Yes,
yeah.
Well, you know, she'll get back relatively quickly, though, I imagine.
Take a moment here to give a shout-out to our other sponsor, Keeps. I'm a big fan of theirs. And it's not because I can use their product. I can't. I've lost all my hair. It's gone. But had I been of the age in my early 20s, late teens, when I started losing my hair, this is what I had dreamed of. And I'm not saying that, you know, snarkily or anything. I started losing my hair when I was 18, just out of high school, going to college, hoping to meet a girl and being all self-conscious. And it sucked. I tried using the topical solution. It was still in its weaker state at the time. It was still only by prescription. When I moved out to LA at about age 23, they had finally started the other medication that's been proven to keep hair. But I had to order it through shady means, and I had to do my own pill cutting, and the dosages were probably off. And then eventually... it got too expensive, and I couldn't afford it, and then all my hair fell out anyways. And now I'm the bald, beautiful man you see before you, but I always think what would have happened if I could have kept my hair, and that's where Keeps come in. You know, 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. Don't have to go to a doctor's office anymore. Thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get hair loss medication delivered right to your home. You deliver it every 3 months, so you have a supply of it there for to use. And it offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Now look, guys, if you're going to do this, it's going to take some time. You're going to need to do about 4 to 6 months to see results. So it's important to act fast, and the sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and more than 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatments start at just $10 a month, and for a limited time, if you use our code, you can get your first month free. That code is SHAKEROPES. If you go to keeps.com/SHAKEROPES, they will give you your first shipment for free. That's KEEPS.com/SHAKEROPES. Look, guys, trust me. Once again, if you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/shakeropes. Receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/shakeropes. And we thank Keeps for sponsoring Shake Them Ropes this week. Okay, post-mortem. NXT TakeOver. Big stories coming out of that. On our picks... the power couple did not end up getting either belt. That said, Johnny Gargano is the best heel in wrestling right now. I love him. I love in terms of comedy and things like that. I love him.
Look, Candace and Johnny has not always worked, and the at Candace and Johnny's house stuff does not always work, but I gotta tell you, Indy Hartwell is a very unexpected jolt of serious energy into the Johnny-Candace dynamic in a way that I did not see coming at all, and I think is really fun. And this takeover show, I mean, we've talked about this for years now. It's nice to see that NXT still has the ability to deliver a really good show with what appears to be kind of a weak card on the face value. And the show was really fun.
Yeah, I thought so too. I loved Gargano's reaction to Io Shirai's kickout after the belt shot. That was just fantastic. I was afraid that the Undisputed Era would come in for more chicanery, because two matches with chicanery is too much usually for NXT takeovers. But that Finn Balor Kyle O'Reilly match was a manly match with broken jaws and punches to the mouth that connected. Yeah,
that
I
is my
that
WWE match of the year contender. Yeah, dude, I can't think of a better WWE match off the top of my head.
They went home a little early. Yeah, but
it
I
was
really
so
that.
Aggressive, though. Yeah. I mean, like there was very little wasted motion. There was two counts without near falls, which is different. Near falls are where they hit a finishing move and someone kicks out. It's like, oh, WWE crutches on that so much. Two counts are where you just hit a big move and it's one, two, not two and a half, not two and, or two and, two and three quarters, like just straight two. Like they did a really nice job working it. Like the liver kick, makes tons of sense to set up the coup de grace. Really solid story. Kyle O'Reilly is an awesome babyface. Love his fire. Love his selling as well. And Finn Balor is really good when he's being intense. I really dug this match, dude. There was no wasted motion.
We got some returns. I did not like the way they did these returns because they did them one right after the other. But the NXT Women's Division, super strong now, in my opinion, with the return of Ember Moon, which is a little shocking because I thought she was done. And then Toni Storm's coming in as well. I would have done one before the match and one after the match to space them out, but I get their thinking is look at the division and now Io Shirai is the hunted. Ember Moon should still be on the main roster and should be a huge star to the fans just because of the finisher. If the RKO out of nowhere is a huge move that pops a crowd huge, the Eclipse, that thing, and the one she hit on Dakota Kai on Wednesday, it's such a fantastic move.
No, she's awesome, man. I really like Ember Moon. I have been hopeful that WWE would see more in her, but I mean, the one thing I will say is that I think NXT is probably going to do a better job utilizing her than she was ever being utilized on the main roster. And the main roster presentation of a lot of female talents outside of Bayley and Sasha is still, and Asuka, is pretty shaky.
And even those took a while to get going.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like...
With a lot of false starts.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, other than Charlotte, they really haven't nailed it on anyone. I mean, Shayna Baszler's biting women's necks.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Shayna Vampire Hunter.
Yeah. It's just, it's one of those things, but I am looking forward to a lot of these matches. What do you think of the refurbished Kushida?
I like the refurbished Kushida. Boy, Velveteen Dream screams a lot, doesn't he?
Gotten worse.
Yeah, no, it's that I agree with you.
I hate to say that, but because, I mean, no, remember, we were grading on a curve when he was in there with Gargano and Ciampa all those times. He is really putting on thick the what I like to call the Ric Flair cell. Oh God!
Yeah. Flair, when you turn the figure four on him and it's like he's dying, and yet never in his career has he tapped out from having the figure four reversed on him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. Dream does seem checked out in terms of kind of advancing as a talent, and he was not there.
And I'm kind of mad they brought him back on Wednesday to attack Kushida and Ciampa during that match.
I agree.
Because I thought the sell on Sunday was great. And yes. Put him out for a while. Get him a sling or something. Have him sell it, make it an angle. But for him to just come back the next Wednesday just because he didn't want to beat either of those guys, I absolutely loathe that.
No, I agree with you. I think it's actually imperative that Velveteen Dream comes back and he's using a weapon because his shoulder is completely useless or something like that on Kushida. But even then you get like the babyface sympathy almost on him. But I'm with you. What the angle was at the pay-per-view should have been a write-off of Velveteen Dream for several weeks because the whole point is to show that Kushida's moves are now so powerful that they can put somebody out. So kind of the flip of this, if you think about it, is what does it say about Kushida's moves that he was making Velveteen Dream squeal and holler and then Velveteen Dream's back like 3 days later? But they're talking about how vicious he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's vicious and he's aggressive, but he doesn't really hurt people. So he's kind of weak.
Yeah, I was disappointed in that. Having Halloween Havoc coming up in a couple weeks, that's some interesting branding from the we're not going to let Cody use his dad's old trademarks side of things. But we had some returns in the WWE with the draft. Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston pick up the SmackDown tag titles and then promptly get shipped to Raw, which means the Street Profits will probably be coming to SmackDown. And then, as you said before, Lars Sullivan, the freaking freak who freaks a lot, back.
It was freaky.
It was an inauspicious debut, to say the least.
Well, they've ruined his pretty good theme song. And
was that CFO? Because all CFO themes must die.
Is that what's happening there?
I think that's what's happened here. And they still have a couple that they have to get rid of, but I don't think they can because they're just too good. Like, for example, Asuka's.
Yes,
you can't
right.
get rid of Asuka's theme. Are you crazy, fool?
No, that'd be crazy. That'd be absolutely crazy. Also, I have fear of what the replacement would be. And, like, Nakamura's is also a CFO, and they're not
it would be the Orient Express theme.
Yes, yeah, right. No. Yeah. The
let's
old WCW production music for, like, Ultimo Dragon or something.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. Why not?
Eugene Nagata's theme.
Oh, you know what we're getting, Chris.
What?
We're going to get tag team matches with Lars Sullivan and Baron Corbin.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. They're going to like each other because you see they're both athletes and they're both winners. Oh, God.
Oh, it's going to be interminable is what it's going to be. I get it.
I mean, but like Baron Corbin. OK, I don't when we're talking about why this is interminable. I want it to be clear. It's not because Baron Corbin's a horrible person or anything like that. It's just. Like his matches, you want to talk
the
about formulaic.
The scripting of those promos is going to be the most dreadful thing about
this. Yes, his promos are wearing
his little crown and his scepter, talking to the freaking freak who freaks a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get smart Lars Sullivan again too. If he's going to be a brain freak as well with the super brain who brains really hard with the super freaky brain. And if we get that, then he'll be like, I'm very smart, Baron or King Corbin. And Corbin's like, yes, I am royalty. Yeah, no, it's going to be great.
I want the Nick Bockwinkle freak. I'm here for that.
He wasn't Nick Bockwinkle when he was doing that. And then, of course, on the other side of the aisle here, we have the fabulous Matt Riddle. And then also Jeff Hardy, who makes up words.
Oh, Matt Riddle's going to be the first guy to lose to this freak one-on-one.
This freaking freak?
The freaking freak who freaks? What?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Jeff Hardy is going to be the first one to lose to the freaking freak.
Oh, no. Riddle has to lose because Hardy's the star.
this kid, this Jeff Hardy, he's got a lot of tread left
on
his tires,
my
friend.
Young up and comer.
Yeah, young up and comer.
Yeah. You know.
It's like Carlos Colon when he entered the Royal Rumble in 1992 or whatever.
Oh, you know what I can't wait for? I can't wait for the four-way promo between the freaking freak who freaks a lot, Baron Corbin in his king outfit,
yep,
and the Mysterio family. Because they got drafted to SmackDown as well. And that is going to be some community theater for the ages. That is going to be cable access theater right there.
King Corbin, the era of your tyranny is about to come to an end. I am looking forward to this.
I can't. And Seth Rollins is going to be involved in it.
Rey Mysterio, you may think that you're a legend, but you're not going to be a legend after tonight. Seth Rollins. Yeah, no, it's going to be like a bad episode of Batman.
Wait, okay, he's the Monday Night Messiah.
On Fridays.
Is he going to be like the Friday? They're not going to do, like they can't, like, Friday Night Pharaoh, which would be kind of cool, to be honest with you, now that I think about it. But he's just going to be the Friday Night Messiah now, right? They're just going to go plain on that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just going to be Friday Night Messiah.
Oh, Chris, I have some breaking news here.
Breaking news.
In the Voices of Wrestling draft, you've been drafted to Music of the Mat.
Oh, okay. So what does that mean for the brands?
Get out. Oh, no.
Did you get anything back in this draft? How does this work?
I think I get one of Joe Lanza's stepkids. I think that's what I get the deal. Ah, jeez. Oh boy. So
draft, well, I'm happy for you.
Draft night one. That joke didn't work. Draft night one done. Most of the people who moved were already moved, such as Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. Again, Naomi might get some more screen time. AJ Styles moved back to Raw so he could watch his kids' football games on Friday, now that Paul Heyman's not there anymore. You know, we'll see what happens. It's just rearranging the mid-card, and that's all it ever is.
Yeah, it's hard to have real thoughts about a draft when you know that they could change this at any point and will change this in the not-so-distant future.
For the future, we did get a third Hell in a Cell match as Sasha Banks allegedly has power of attorney to make matches. We're going to get Aunt Pam and Sasha as the third match because Roman and Jay are an I Quit match.
A Hell in the Cell I Quit match.
Jay smiling throughout that promo. What? Stop that.
It looks like they put together some sort of episode of, what's their show called? Like the WWE Network show. They did like the biography, kayfabe biography thing. Like
the 24 hours?
Yeah, 24 or whatever. Like they did that for Jey Uso.
The day of.
Yeah, and that seems to be kind of the notes that we'd like them to hit. But on SmackDown itself, what's in actual canon, I mean, yeah, Jey Uso still comes off as like a twit who doesn't get the gravity of fighting your kin in an I Quit match.
In hell!
Yes, particularly once Roman says, I'm going to punish you after you quit. The match itself and me getting you to the point of submission is not going to be the punishment. After you get punished to that point, there will be more punishment.
That said, Roman's promo, pretty damn good.
Oh, no, it's fantastic.
I want you to call your shot because I liked your idea of how what happens in this match.
So I think at some point, Jimmy comes down. He tries to help out Jay because Jay's in trouble. And Roman grabs Jimmy and starts hurting Jimmy, who is still, I think, is he real life injured or kayfabe injured?
Real life injured.
He's real life injured, but they're also, you know, doing kayfabe injured. And Roman will threaten to injure Jimmy further. And that will be the thing that makes Jay quit.
I like that idea because it's
in the hobby. It's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous round bag of cards. And yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or, wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Doors unlocked, much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
The reverse of what happened at Night of Champions or Clash of Champions.
Yes.
Kind of. Yeah.
Yes.
And
this whole match is not really about breaking Jay's body. It's about breaking his spirit.
And, of course, the third Hell in a Cell is Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. Okay. That Randy promo didn't do anything for me. I gotta be honest with you. They're gonna keep building this these concussion angles, which I'm uncomfortable.
I don't like the concussion angles. I agree with you. I think, look, it's too serious of a thing that happens to people. And I also think, to your point, let's remember when Jeff Hardy fell off the ladder in like a ridiculous way a couple of weeks ago. I think when you play light on concussion angles, it makes real injury angles and stuff also seem lighter too.
Chris, do you remember when Rey Mysterio was thrown off a building during Money in the Bank?
He was fine, dude, because you see there's a net on the floor right below.
There's a second building right below that he landed on.
He just landed on the net. Seth Rollins, you tried to kill me, but I landed on the net one floor below, and now I am back this week.
Your Rey Mysterio is so good. I love it. And that said, Otis, jurisprudence, reading words out of a book, continuance, which I appreciated, because that's the WWE move in their trials as well. But it appears that the Miz angle will have to wait.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking stuff. It is.
Oh yeah,
it was on pins and needles with this one.
They're getting this Money in the Bank contract off of him one way or another.
Yes, they're just trying to figure out a way to get this off of Otis. But no, they took Mandy away from him. They've lost all interest in Otis. I can't decide if they're turning Tucker or not, but I don't even think they're interested in Tucker.
I'm here
which
for
is,
Otis as the biblical Job.
Yes. No, I would love him to get just endlessly punished. Because that's actually a great way to build babyface sympathy on this guy. When he finally has his like just rage. That's the thing that we as a viewer can get really behind. But I just think the way this is going right now is Tucker and Otis are they've lost their new car smell, and we're now just trying to demobilize them.
I wouldn't be shocked if Tucker gets drafted to Raw.
Oh, we break. That would be bad for both of them, I'd say.
I would agree, but I wouldn't be surprised. That's no. What I'm saying. Let's give a shout out to our other sponsor this week, MyBookie. Guys, playoffs are on. Watched some playoff baseball last night. I'm not a big baseball guy, but I do love me some playoff baseball. Means it's one thing, it's winning season. NBA finals are on right now. Chris, get me a score. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more at MyBookie. Winning season is all about your chance to win big. Bet those NBA playoffs if they continue after tonight. Some Major League Baseball, some UFC, politics, whatever. The craziest sports fall of your lifetime is here. Bet on football while it's still going before they cancel all the games. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, and collect your cash. Invest in your intuition. Select from hundreds of future bets, or you can bet the games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big brain of yours to good use. Use promo code ROPES and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. Designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Nude players would probably add even more excitement, to be honest with you. But thousands of cross sports wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now to bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. Once again, use that code ROPES and double your deposit. What's the score?
The score is currently 96-97. Lakers in the lead with 6 Ooh. Minutes, 18 seconds to go.
Ooh, the Heat were up big for a while there. Okay. So Chris can do some live betting with MyBookie as we continue. Chris, I have decided in this political season that I would like to start a campaign, and I have found my issue after watching both NXT UK and AEW and NXT and Raw and SmackDown. That is to make squash matches dominant again. I am done with the 50-50 squash. I want to see guys kill dudes, and that's it. I don't want to see babyface fire. out of my guys who are probably not going to get pushed for a while. I just want to see bad men do bad things to pasty guys or small guys. That's all I want out of a squash match. And I can't get it, Chris. I can't get it.
The two biggest offenders to me are on AEW Dynamite and NXT UK, though. They just love the overly long squash match.
Yes, and I don't understand. Jack Stars is there to die for my entertainment.
And yes. Unless you are pushing him in the immediate, and you've got a clear thing to do with him. This guy is here to lose right now.
Unless you're building the story of the kid who keeps getting close and then finally wins, I don't want to see him coming close. I don't want to see him getting heat on Saxton Huxley after Huxley had that manly rebirth against Walter.
Let's talk about whatever the hell it is that Saxton Huxley was doing throughout that match.
I will not call him by the derivative. I will not. He's doing Brody.
Rush.
He's doing Brody, and I'm. You know what? Or John Nord, if you want to go that far. But they're trying something with him, and it's far better than the book gimmick.
Better than the book. It's not Joseph Connors. I was about to say he's doing I Am Worthy. That's Joseph Connors, and Connors is still doing that.
No, he's a brute. He's a brute, and that's what they're going to go with now, that he's gone full
brute. Here's my other problem, though, with the Saxton Huxley as a brute thing. This only really works if he's having matches against guys the size of Jack Stars every week, and there's not enough Jack Starses in this division other than, like, Flash Morgan Webster and Mark Andrews.
Well, that and also waiting for the bell to start a match. I just want him to come in and start killing the guy.
As he moves up the card, the Saxton Huxley as big brute, I think it just kind of... Like, when he gets in against Pete Dunne, I don't think it's going to have the same panache.
Well, there was the one on NXT also with Ruff, who... God love him. He tried to do that acrobatic stuff before getting killed.
I think they see something sort of with Ruff.
That's fine. Keep him off TV then. I don't
want
to see him get killed.
But I will also say, I want him there when they're ready. He also reminds me a lot of Leo Rush, but I think I like Leo Rush's act a little bit more.
Yes. I think Leo Rush has a lot more polish than Ruff, and that's fine. It's a learning process. I get that, but I don't want to see Ruff losing week after week after week, and then Tahuti Miles getting, a new name, but we all know, hey, it's that guy that's been losing week after week that we've been seeing. It's just now he has a new name.
Yes.
That's all I asked for.
I cannot remember his new name right now. I remember Tahuti Miles more. Yeah, Adonis, that's right.
Yeah, and I liked that promo during, that's the thing we forgot in our takeover. I loved the getup of Santos Escobar. Coming out.
Yeah.
His entrance gear with the sombrero and the mask. He just looked like a damn star to me. And I love that. And I love the match with Swerve Scott. I thought that was a great, great match.
Escobar, I've been a huge fan of him since he was in Lucha Underground. I don't, love the Legado Del Fantasma, but... I don't
like him having flunkies, and I don't like the interference all the time.
Yes, yes. It's like a watered-down version of a Lucha Underground faction.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. Or just any faction. Like, WWE does their factions so poorly because it's always a couple of red shirts that are supposed to get the rub and the star.
All that Escobar needs to be right now is Man of 1,000 Holds Dean Malenko in WCW. Just winning and being a heel, but not being necessarily a over-the-top heel, just... winning and not ever playing to the fans and always going against baby faces. And he's always the guy you want to see lose. And he's always the guy who wins frustratingly.
Yeah. The Adonis promo though was pretty good after that. So I'm here for them building new guys. I just hope, they do right by them. We're talking squash matches, but I don't want to go into that again. What do you think of this Killian Dane Drake Maverick thing?
Oh, God, you love the theme song. Drake Maverick is just a fun, likable guy. Killian Dane, similarly, a fun, likable guy. Can't wait to see what adventures and journeys and friendships get formed along the way here between Drake Maverick and Killian Dane. And, good vibes.
Gonna leave that because that's awesome. Okay, here's my other soapbox for the week. AEW. Anybody who's in AEW, anybody who knows any, I know somebody in AEW. I could pass this along to him. if you're going to build your brand on being the non-WWE, then you gotta do the things that WWE does poorly well, as opposed to parodying them. What am I talking about? Well, let's take a look at a couple of things from this week. The Young Bucks watching the TV in the most ridiculous angle ever. I get it. I get that you want to mock WWE here, but here's what this does. If you're not doing it the correct way, it does not give you the leeway when you do something stupid, which they have done.
Remember, which they Brandy do at the tail end of that show.
Yeah. It doesn't give you the excuse it doesn't give you the capital to then, when you have to go into camp, which pro wrestling has to do from time to time, it doesn't give you the forgiveness anymore, is what it does. The ending angle, which was just straight out of Festival of Friendship, and I get they're doing the comment, the homage to it. I get that. But then also, why were we so excited for FTR to come into AEW, Chris?
We were excited for them to come into AEW because they'd be finally having serious matches and serious angles. And the idea was that AEW was a place where it was not going to be devoid of humor and a joyless watch or anything like that, but it was going to be more serious. And like, just to kind of add to your point here, dude, you know, if you're going to go after camp, that's fine. You end the episode, though, with credits, Saturday Night Live style, and a giant COVID party in the ring, everyone waving and stuff, to just reach for a Saturday Night Live gimmick.
Yeah, the hot dogs, look, I don't mind if it's going to be the snarky baby faces against the uber serious heels in FTR. But that best friend segment made me mad because it's just straight out of what FTR I thought was escaping from.
Yeah, the weenies thing, and to your point too, they've also referenced the goofy outfits that FTR was supposed mm-hmm. to wear, was going to have to wear in WWE. The other part of like the over-the-shoulder stuff that Matt Jackson's doing is, one, is he supposed to be a heel or not? If he's supposed to be a heel, then him doing a joke that we find funny is sort of undermine that. Two, in order to understand that joke, you have to watch the other company. And they make so many references that don't work if you're not steeped in WWE's canon, in WWE's mm-hmm. world. And the whole point of watching AEW is to get something different. Like, and the thing I liked about Lucha Underground in its good era is that Lucha Underground wasn't constantly referencing WWE. I mean, there were some along the way here for sure. I undoubtedly they're not coming right to top of mind, but I'm sure there were. But it wasn't doing it on a regular basis the way AEW does.
Things I really liked in AEW this week. I loved the TH2 versus FTR match for what it was. I thought Jack Evans kind of playing more acrobatic Ricky Morton was kind of fun to watch.
Yes, wounded animal Jack Evans, like trying to defend the limb and still go on the offensive and stuff. Like, no, he was really good as the babyface in peril.
Here's an idea, though, Jim Ross. Don't bury them as they're coming out. Wow, they've been on Dark a lot.
Well, here's an idea. Don't bury them, Jim Ross, is sort of an evergreen comment about Ross on commentary these days.
With the Naked Gun broadcast booth with 20 people in it at the same time. Come on, guys. It's time for Ross to go. Stop this. It's killing it. I didn't appreciate that. Excalibur came in with the save with the win streak thing. But I enjoyed this match for was. I like the gimmick that FTR is going to defend against babyface or heel in this 20-minute challenge thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense, especially if you're trying to establish them as the top heels and as the people that everyone hates. They need to be the heels that even the other heels hate.
The other thing that I really liked in AEW this week, again, the guy who tickles my needs in professional wrestling, as usual. Cody Rhodes and that dog collar match. That thing was manly as hell, too. I loved it. I loved the blood. I loved it was vicious. I would have liked a little bit more build for it to be kind of a blood feud, maybe for the anniversary show, but I understand why they did it now.
But, why did they do it now? Enlighten me, because it did feel rushed to me.
To hype the Orange Cassidy versus Cody match for next week, pretty much, and build up Cody as something. I think they may actually belt Orange Cassidy next week.
Oh, and have Cody... Oh, okay. All right, that's interesting. That's interesting. I thought it was a little too quick to close the circuit on the Brody-Cody storyline.
I understand that. I think that's a good criticism, to be honest with you. I would much rather let this thing breathe a little more.
And I think the Dark Order as well has kind of lost momentum as a narrative idea.
Well, John Silver's a comedy guy.
Yes, and it's no knock on Silver. That was a casting character mistake, not from Silver, but just having someone who's like Brody's goober like that. They were much better when they were a bunch of like broken guys who were kind of like molded together and more powerful in a pack.
Yeah, as opposed to guys who really like Chili's.
Right. Yes.
From being the elite, things of that nature. Yeah, I get that. But the match itself, I really enjoyed. It was very... I liked bringing Greg Valentine in to watch. I did not like cutting back to Greg Valentine during the watching, where he had to act concerned. But I'm always here to see Greg. I like their connections to history, and there are times, especially with Cody, where he wants to be connected to history. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, no, I liked this match. I think that Dynamite is going to blood too often on a weekly basis. Ooh. On the show.
Okay. Continue. Expound.
I just think that, they're using color just a little too often. It's not like I'm like, oh, God, this is too much. It's just I'm expecting blood spots now rather than going, oh, they did a blood spot.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I can see that. I like my blood with blood feuds rather than just in any old match, just to make it seem intense.
And yeah, you have to do blood in a dog collar match too. I get the dueling tensions. This is why I just think that this needed more time to build up, and we really needed to like earn the dog collar stuff a little bit better.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought, you know, Cody comes back, but he's been injured and he's not sure of himself. He runs through a few members of the Dark Order first to then get to Brody. Like Brody
says,
hey.
Where was my training montage? Like, this is the perfect opportunity for an 80s style training montage.
I agree. It's a perfect chance to, you know, have him, you know, do a Colt Cabana match here where Colt's still kind of the reluctant Dark Order guy. And you can further his story a bit here. You know, you can go through 10 and 5 and the Beaver Boys.
Boy, the Colt Cabana storyline really has lost momentum.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah, I mean, they'll continue on it at some point here, but there's a rhythm you want with stories, and it seems like some of the stories they were running through Dark Order have kind of lost rhythm. Even Anna Jay, to a certain extent. Great launch of her, but she hasn't been on Dynamite in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I agree there. I liked the Will Hobbs elevation.
Yes, yeah,
that's the way
I agree.
That's the way to do a loss / squash to me with that guy. And then teaming him with Darby is going to be fun, I think.
Teaming him with Darby is going to be really good, especially eventually I'm sure they'll be spun off from Moxley, and just Darby and Hobbs, I think, makes a lot of sense. Good tandem, good babyface energy there. Great job with the story. I liked the commentary. Excalibur relays the story about Will Hobbs, which is extremely touching, and it like breaks Taz for a second because he's kind of like, oh, I don't want to heal on that. Like that, the story about how Will Hobbs became a professional
wrestler. Yeah, it was ill timed. Oh, his brother was shot, and just like, whoa, Excalibur.
No, it was
now
funny
is
because
time.
Taz is a good guy, and he's like, I'm not going to heal on that. It was just like, sitting there going, like, oh, what does this man do with that?
I mean, between that and the Ricky Skaggs comment versus Ricky Starks, Ricky Skaggs is a bluegrass artist, and Jim Ross just called him Ricky Skaggs right at the table. But between that, I mean, Excalibur was doing yeoman's work this week.
Yes.
And
yes.
Now the one thing we must bury because it ticks off a listener to the show. Kenny Omega's a terrible promo.
Yeah, no, and it's been multiple weeks now. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the results are in, the data is in, and facts are facts. Kenny Omega is a bad promo. It's bad.
And especially now that he's going more and more dramatic about it. It just shows that he's playing to the back of... He has that Al Pacino scenery chewing thing going.
It's the same thing that has always been true in his matches. When the match calls for a big performance, Omega's your guy. Because Omega's got the big performance. But when you want
him... He'll shake his head, he'll open his mouth, everything will be 10 times bigger than it has to be on television, yes.
If you want the amplifier at 10, he can turn that amplifier to 10. But you got scratchy pots when you try to bring it down to like 5 or 6 or whatever. Like, this is not a guy with, you know, a medium setting. He does not do a subdued performance. It's always hard. It's a heavy performance.
That's all I got for AEW. Did you want anything else out of it?
Just taking a look here. Oh, MJF and Jericho. This is a slow Jericho face turn, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Luther was some rough seas, but. Dude, it's his 30th anniversary. He can do what he wants.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was fine. As you said, it was like a festival of friendship sort of thing here. And yeah, that's all I got for AEW.
I'll bounce around a bit. The two NXTs. I hated the State of the Union from Kaylee Ray. Because it broke down like every WWE segment does. But I'm here for Ginny and Kaylee Ray as a feud.
This is a pre-taped show, and that breakdown managed to drag. Edit that thing to be punchy, please.
I mean, but between that and the Nina Samuel leaving her partner angle that then blew up again during that whole thing.
Yeah, I know. I mean, okay, so if you want to make the Amel Nina Samuels thing kind of intriguing, here's what needed to happen there. After the match, we go backstage and we get an interview from Amel, who says something about this. And you kind of set the table so that now it's clear that she's actually a babyface. Because when, you know, she came out, she was acting heelish
they
or whatever.
Worked together to beat up Piper Niven.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And then you had, if I'm WWE. And I'm not. I get Xia Brookside stateside as soon as I can, and I push her to the moon. But they don't do pure babyface as well. They don't do young babyface as well.
I would love to have Xia Brookside in a feud against Bayley, where Bayley sees Xia Brookside and sees everything she absolutely hates.
That is what
I was
thinking.
The things she used to be. Yeah.
Oh, look how perky you are. Look how friendly you are.
And she just wants to destroy her.
And it's just familiarity breeding contempt. And she's looking at her from 5 or 6 years ago, and she's just seething. Oh, Chris, I want that. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, who would I want to see here? Oh, I want to see Bayley and Xia Brookside like tomorrow.
Yeah,
a feud, because
it'd be great.
That feud on SmackDown didn't do a lot for me. I liked the chair shots and stuff, but the promo work.
It was so lazy. It was such a lazy way to get out of that match.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, gee, why didn't I think of that earlier? why not do that every time? You'll never lose the belt.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, champions should do that all the time. Protect themselves.
I thought the rounds match from the Heritage Cup was kind of fun.
Like, it was fantastic.
I
loved I think A-Kid and Flash Morgan Webster have great chemistry. I loved the slapping at the end.
I liked that the momentum loss at the end of a round. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I was saying I was interested and intrigued to see how they were going to use the rounds format to tell stories. And I like that Flash Morgan Webster, if he had just been able to close the deal at the end of, I don't know, like round three or round four or whatever, there was a point where he was really kind of putting A-Kid on his heels, but time ran out. If Flash had been able to win it there, he would have won the match, but instead he wasn't able to close the deal, and so he ended up losing the match. I it was fun. It was a really cool match.
We had another entry into the mystery of who is attacking Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster.
Yeah.
What do you know? The Hunt was on the scene again, Chris.
Yeah, but they weren't in suits this time, Jeff, so it could be anyone.
Well, they did tease the Eddie Dennis appearance at the top of the stairs there, but...
Oh, see? You are getting swerved that this is all planned by Eddie. Oh, you know what this is going to be?
It's pretty deadly. It's pretty deadly the entire
time. No, here's
the
deal, though. Here's the deal. Dennis is going to try to frame the Hunt. That's what's going to happen here.
If they did that, if they could pull that off... I'd love it, because the Indy Hartwell thing is clever as hell, too.
Oh, the Indy Hartwell thing, you know, a couple weeks ago, you're like, did you watch the Battle Royal? And I was like, no, it's just a 15-minute time filler. And the Indy Hartwell moment made me feel really stupid. I was like, wow, I wish I'd been kind of paying attention to this, because this is a really nice little Easter egg thing. And, like, I like Indy Hartwell. I think she's got something, at least in terms of characterization.
I loved... the TV, because Johnny before, what was that? Who's that? Who'd she ever beat? and then, oh, I thought it was absolutely brilliant to have a USB drive in the box that he could put in the TV and show Indy Hartwell highlighted during the Battle Royale, as opposed to him just happening to notice Indy Hartwell in the Battle Royale. That's one of the smarter things WWE has done in a long, long time.
No, and it's such an interesting piece of characterization, too, because, like, Hartwell could be any number of characters, right? Like, she could be kind of, like, the crazy stalker person. She could be really just trying to, like, learn the Gargano way. Like, there's just a number of different directions they could take this, and I'm with you. I loved when he's like, who'd she ever beat? The answer, of course, to that, Jeff, is that she beat Shotzi Blackheart, which I love, because Indy Hartwell was screaming that out during matches and stuff. I'm excited to see where this character twist is going.
Yeah, we went over Drake and Killian. Dexter Lumis. Okay. I did like the run-in by... Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes is my favorite mid-card, cocky, delusional heel. The problem is you can't do delusional heel comedy and Gargano comedy and Drake Maverick comedy on the same show.
No, and if one had to go, it would be obviously Drake Maverick. What just a complete misusage of both of these guys.
That is main roster bad comedy.
It really is. It's not helping Drake Maverick at all, but it's not helping Killian Dane. Like, oh, he's got a heart after all. Oh, great. Drake Maverick's a dork. Okay.
Yes, it's going to be weeks of Killian Dane killing Maverick, and Maverick basically ragdolling for the pin after getting powerbombed and all these other things. And then it turns out, well, I really like the toughness of the little guy.
I think we're already at that, but I still think their finishing move is going to be him powerbombing Drake Maverick onto people.
I'll tell you the other thing out of the two NXT shows that I thought was a little underappreciated that I liked. I really like the dichotomy of the Walter crew. Can't remember the name right now.
Are you talking about Imperium?
Imperium, thank you.
Okay.
Imperium kind of being the white collar villains, and Gallus being the blue collar villains.
Yes.
I dig that. I think that's a good dynamic, and that's why I've always liked heel versus heel feuds, like when those two groups fight, because it's such a class system type thing that goes underappreciated, especially for NXT UK, which can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think it gives an interesting wrinkle to the Gallus firm whenever they want to. I want to call them the Gallus farm, because it always sounds like the promos, but they're the Gallus firm. Whenever they need to work as slight baby faces, you always have that blue collar thing to lean into. And I like that. And kind of conversely, too, if you ever need to slightly babyface Imperium, they're the guys who, you know, care about tradition and stuff in the sport of traditional wrestling.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, you have ways of putting a wrinkle into both of these groups that is admirable as narratively necessary, and also a way of pulling that wrinkle out whenever you need to.
Like Gallus are going to be the guys where if Imperium became way too powerful, they're going to turn and help the baby faces because it's like, hey, we're all in this together kind of thing. Where Imperium,
yeah, like with
Ilya
Dragunov.
Yeah. Oh, I know the one thing we forgot when we're talking about the main roster and also the news. The leader of Retribution has been revealed, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
They've also lost a member of Retribution. It appears Mercedes Martinez is no longer a part of Retribution, which I find sad, but I'm also a little relieved because I don't think they could do two heel women in the stable correctly. I think they are better off just with the one representative who's female in Mia Yim. But
Mercedes Martinez was Skull Crowbar, right?
Yeah, I think she was. She,
that was her name.
She was Retaliation, I think.
Snake Motorcycle.
Snake Motor. Yeah. I think she belongs in a group like Retribution. She's just so big and imposing. I
know she would have been
back.
A great leader. It's weird to add in someone from the main roster. Never mind Ali, but when you have so many members in Retribution and so many people in Retribution who make sense as a leader character.
Yeah, and she's been such a veteran. I don't want to see her back with Robert Stone and Aaliyah, please. I want to see her be a badass. I'd love to see her and Shayna be a team, to be honest with you. But yeah, Ali is now the leader of Retribution, revealed. A lot of people doing the booking in their heads of the hacker angle being connected. Let's not go that far. I am a little bit fascinated by the socio-political aspect of this. Mostly because you have, in one angle, a former cop, the African-American stable, and the Antifa knockoff.
Yeah, no, it's like a postmodern commentary on American politics that doesn't actually make any sense. Yeah, it's like a Hunter S. Thompson sort of postmodern wrestling angle acid trip on American politics. It's a strange, strange angle.
And I don't think you can comment on it either because it just becomes too dicey from China. If you mention that Ali's a former police officer...
Right,
in
and that,
angle.
Like, that this group is presented as Antifa, yes, but in, like, the negative light of Antifa, as in, like, in almost a para-domestic terrorist sort of group. Everything, that they're fighting with the Hurt Business, that Ricochet and Apollo are going to go and try to make nicey-nice with them apparently next week. All of this is weird.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are going to get killed again?
Yeah, no, I was seeing on Twitter, and maybe this is just Twitter talk, but Ricochet was like, oh, I need to talk to Ali about this. I don't know that I agree with what Ali's doing. I'm like, yes.
Geeks are going to get beaten down
you
again.
You nerd.
Ricochet, give him that high draft spot on Raw. Everybody, I saw some chatter about, oh, this means they're going to use him finally. No,
no, it doesn't. It doesn't
Dana
mean
Brooke
that at all.
Got drafted on TV because they're going to use her that much? No, it's just they're going to close that gap on the story type thing.
They don't care about his 630 senton at all. Like that, they're already over it. I love him. He's a great wrestler, but they're already over all this flash.
Oh, and sporadically, since we've been all over the place, since I've been just disheveled in terms of actually having a run down here. You think they're sending a message to Lana?
No! What leads you to believe that, Jeff?
I don't know, 3 weeks through a table?
This week's was really funny, though, right? Like, they really made it a point to be like, no, Lana goes through the table.
Thank you for your loyalty. We know you look. We're not gonna say anything about your husband going to work for the competition. We're just saying, if you really loved us here in WWE, you'd let Nia Jax put you through the tape.
Well, okay, so it's not about Lana, right? What it's about in doing this to Lana is sending a message to everyone else on the roster of this is what's going to happen. This is the reasonable expectation if you ever did something like this.
Oh, Cedric, you're thinking about going to AEW to join your girlfriend Big Swole? No, I don't think they've gotten that far. I don't think they know that to date. But yeah, that's just... Boy. Take away her Twitch account, you take away her social media, and you put her through a table for 3 weeks. How's that for loyalty?
Oh, and she'll be going through a table again next week, too.
I'm here for Lana as Cactus Jack and being hardcore and coming down to the ring with a kendo stick and blue jeans and smoking a cigarette and popping a beer and coming out to Inner Sandman.
I like those old WCW pay-per-views where Stan Hansen's on. He's like actually spitting real chewing tobacco on people as he's walking out.
I mean, for Lana spitting chewing tobacco, I want Lana to be you know, early to mid '90s hardcore legend. That's what I want. I'm kind of here for that, to be honest with you.
It would be really funny if the end of this, she turns the tables on Shayna and Nia and just goes hardcore on them. And like, at least in that case.
Here we go. She gets pissed off and she goes to the back to Raw Underground and she starts breaking Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke's arms. And she starts slugging and she gets Baba Tunde in there and a camel clutch or something. It gets him to choke out too. And she becomes the baddest bitch on Raw.
Yeah, I would have her tap out Strowman.
Oh, there you go. That's what I want. Strowman loses to Roman next week on the season premiere. They both end up in Raw Underground, and Lana taps him out in under 30. That's what I want.
Yeah. Shoots the legs. Strowman goes down, doesn't
Shoots
know what hits him.
Continue.
Strowman doesn't know what hits him. He's looking left. He's looking right. He's reaching for the corner here. Lana grabs that arm and just puts on the Fujiwara armbar, one of the snuggest you've ever seen, and just breaks that arm.
No one will ever say Lana shoots the leg. Ever. Oh, God. Oh, I needed that. I think we'll end on that high note. I'm not high. Chris might be.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, MyBookie. Use code ROPES, double your first deposit. Also, Keeps, use code SHAKEROPES, get your first order for free. It's politics season. I've made my platform. I want squashes to be dominant again. There's actually real politics going on. Chris is following them and doing a podcast about them.
Yeah, if you want to catch my review of the first presidential debate, that's up at don'tworry.tv. But I also just put out today, so it's available as you're listening to this, over at don'tworry.tv on iTunes and on Stitcher, the Don't Worry About the Government podcast about the vice presidential debate. So I talk about Kamala Harris and Mike Pence, go in depth. I've got a whole bunch of clips and all that sort of jazz in there. If you didn't watch the debate, or if you want the debate to make a little bit more sense, I do find actually hearing it in clips and snippets, and I've found that to be a lot more useful than watching it as one straight product. So hopefully you will too over at don'tworry.tv.
You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris at ChrisNovembrino. You can just follow the show at ShakeThemRopes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Network at Voices Wrestling on Twitter. Lots of great shows to listen to. Please go to our sponsors. Have a great weekend.
Joe Lanza can't trade me away.